You've tuned in to Get Connected. I'm Mike Jagerbaum. I've got Carmi Levy with me today. We've got a great program. We're going to be talking to the Michelin folks. I was invited down to a sustainability conference down in Sonoma, California. Michelin hosted it, and I got to actually talk with some of the Michelin folks when it comes to tire technology, but also some of the innovation that they're doing when it comes to hydrogen fuel cells and even, retractable sails for large cargo ships, which I didn't know Michelin was into. But before we get into that and just my experience, Carmi, I thought we'd just hit on some of the big news items this week. And I think one of the big ones would have to be Apple. Looks like the U.S. government is kind of going after them for, I guess, monopoly behavior is what they're saying, anti-competitive behavior.
Yeah, Department of Justice launching a pretty landmark suit against Apple on antitrust, basically saying they've been using their position in a number of ways to, you know, their control over iOS to block new apps and new services, to force Android users to have green bubbles, not blue bubbles. They specifically called that out. If you have a watch that isn't an Apple watch, the way it works with iPhones is limited. Features don't work. It's deliberately constrained. Payment solutions, it prefers its own Apple Pay solution as opposed to competing solutions, and it kind of imposes punitive measures against anyone who doesn't have an Apple logo. So multiple fronts in these accusations, basically saying that what Apple does is it builds a walled garden and then it doesn't allow everyone to play in it with the same set of rules. Very similar to what European officials have been saying all along. They, of course, went after Apple, fined Apple $2 billion just earlier this month in antitrust allegations. We also know that that Department of Justice went after Google last year for their ad business, said that they also are operating in a monopolistic manner. So there's this growing trend of countries who are essentially saying big tech has gotten a little too big for its britches. The way it operates is definitely in antitrust territory. That's what they allege. And they're starting to get really aggressive at going after them and hauling them into court and starting to prove or trying to prove these allegations that we've been talking about for a long time. Didn't really do anything about it until now.
Have we seen this circus before, Carmi? I'm thinking back a couple decades ago to Microsoft and Windows, and the U.S. went after them hard and, threatening to literally break up all their different business divisions, the operating system, Microsoft Office, the gaming division. So how is this different this time?
It's funny. You could cut and paste the brand names into the allegations and it would probably line up. So no, this, if you're having your sense of deja vu right about now, then that's not a coincidence. We've seen this before. We bought this T-shirt. And as we saw during the DOJ versus Microsoft event, it took years for that to wind its way back and forth through the legal system. And by the time it was ultimately resolved, it was resolved with a confirmation. Yeah, Microsoft did behave in ways that were counter to a fully free market. But it was too late, because by then Microsoft, of course, had won the internet war. Internet Explorer prevailed. Netscape Navigator was nowhere to be seen. And it was a bit of a Pyrrhic victory, because the court system had moved much more slowly than the market did. And that's kind of what we're looking at here as well, as we are fairly late in the smartphone era. iPhones are no longer a fast-growing category for Apple. By the time the DOJ lawsuit winds its way through the courts and ultimately gets decided one way or the other, all of us are probably going to be using whatever it is, that post-iPhone device. Maybe it is the Vision Pro, I don't know. But we will have moved on from smartphones, and a lot of the platforms that are considered central to this case will be yesterday's news by then. And I think Apple knows that, and Apple will continue to reap the rewards while the DOJ pushes its case.
And I think that's the important point here, Carmi. This can take years. This isn't going to be some case, that's going to be tried or, in a month from now. It'll go on for years.
Exactly. And while it's slowly, you know, sort of moving the machinery of the legal system, the market's going to do what the market does. Apple will continue to introduce new updates to iOS and iPadOS and all of its operating systems. It'll continue to evolve its services ecosystem. We'll continue to see new versions of hardware, you know, that you can almost set your watch to every year. And the market isn't really going to care all that much. I remember when the Microsoft case was working its way through as well, that, you know, consumers were making decisions about which browser they preferred, and no one really paid a whole lot of attention to what was happening in the courts. And I suspect that'll happen here as well. I think it makes for really great political theater. I think you will see members of both parties in the U.S. trying to score political points in this election year. And it's no coincidence that it's happening during an election year. But long term, anyone who thinks that lawsuits like this ultimately change the direction of markets, I think they're deluding themselves. Apple isn't going to change its behavior anytime soon, nor should anyone else. This is the way markets play out. And Apple says that it is not a monopolist. It says that this is how it delivers innovative products to a market. Obviously, if you're Google or a competitor, you've got a different perspective. And cases like this allow us to have those important discussions about where that line lies. How do we define antitrust behavior in the tech era? What is appropriate behavior, and you know, how do we define inappropriate behavior, and how do we punish that? These are cases that help us figure that out. We haven't had that conversation since the Microsoft era, and it's high time that we do.
So I want to bring up a couple things. Anti-competitive behavior. There is a major competitor. It's Google out there, right? And Google has its own kind of garden. Might not be as walled as Apple, but if you don't like Apple's approach, you can go to Google, and their garden, their devices, I would say, are you know, on par with Apple devices as far as technology and capability. And then on top of that, I don't know. I think the reason why a lot of these companies exist now is because of Apple. You know, Apple creating this entire app economy. Do you remember software development before? Like,
everyone, it was a mess.
Everyone pirated everything. I pirated everything. It was awful. And because Apple was able to somewhat lock it down, it spawned, you know, a multi-billion, trillion-dollar, you know, development industry. So in some ways, yeah, I think we have to thank them.
I think we do. And Apple kind of has, like, that's part of its legacy. If you look at the music industry before the iTunes App Store became a thing, right? Think of how we were all downloading music illegally, and then Apple came up with an elegant, relatively friction-free solution that was affordable, and suddenly it didn't make sense to download music illegally or through a peer-to-peer network. You just went legal. And so to a certain extent, yeah, Apple in building that walled garden has brought order to a landscape that was marked primarily by chaos previously. I think what I'm hearing from the DOJ and some of the language in this initial set of allegations is that some of the terms that they've since imposed on developers are onerous, that they're locked into payment protocols that Apple defines, that if any developer that is large enough and wants to have its own payment protocol in place, they get punished. Look no further than Epic Games with Fortnite and what happened there when Epic proposed an alternative and tried to kind of bring in its own payment protocol in through the back door. Apple deleted them from the App Store. So, you know, there's yes, they created the landscape, but do they have the right to determine the rules to the degree that they have? Apple says they do. The DOJ disagrees. And again, I'm not saying who's right or wrong. In fact, it may not necessarily be a case of who's right or wrong. It's we've got a new landscape thanks to companies like Apple. We've got to come up with a broad-based agreement on what constitutes acceptable behavior. And I think that's a healthy thing. And I think Apple has brought significant good to the market. And I think even negotiating these details of where to draw those lines, I think will ultimately benefit everyone. It'll benefit Apple, it'll benefit Google, and more importantly, it'll benefit consumers who will have more choice, and it'll benefit developers who want to build businesses and careers within these ecosystems, because it'll give them more choice and they'll have more kind of options available to them as they decide which path to follow.
Been talking about the DOJ in the U.S. going after Apple as an anti-competitive company. I guess we'll have to see over the years how that all plays out, but I think things will evolve, and I don't know if anything major will happen. I just want to give a quick shout out to our website, getconnectedmedia.com. We're always running contests, and if you're tuned into this show, right now we're running a contest with the Friendly Future Foundation from TELUS. We're giving away a Google Pixel smartphone. Yes, it's a beautiful phone, I think a Google Pixel 7. It's got a great camera. Plus, TELUS is also letting you donate $250 of their money to your favorite charity as well. If you want extra chances to win and you want to enter as well, go to the website, getconnectedmedia.com. Going to shift gears here now a bit, Carmi. I got invited down to a sustainability event put on by Michelin. It was pretty interesting. Obviously, they want to talk about their tires and the different types of innovations that are happening. It's fun being a journalist. I get invited to these trips. Obviously they want to curry favor with me and have me talk about it. I don't, accept all these trips. I always, try to do my due diligence on, who I want to see, what I want to learn. And, tire technology is interesting to me, especially with the advent of electric vehicles. They're a whole different beast. They're heavier. They have different needs. So I got to learn all about that. And I got to race around Sonoma Racetrack as well. They took us down to Sonoma. So, which is right next to Napa. Maybe it's part of Napa. I don't know my geography that well.
I want to see the video for that. That's no question. I want to see you driving a car around a racetrack. That'd be fun. But no, it's funny. You raise a really interesting point. I remember I read a couple of articles over the last couple of months about just how fast tire technology is evolving because of the shift toward electric vehicles. And you wouldn't even realize it at first glance, but we really are in the midst of a major revolution. Is that EVs put very unique demands on tires, and the technology that companies like Michelin are throwing at them. Events like this are crucial to really understanding in detail exactly what's going on. And of course they want us to be talking about them, which is exactly what we're doing, but this is our future. This is absolutely critical to ensuring that we preserve the environment that we have, that we get the most out of the vehicles that we park in our driveways. And that we're using technology to, leave a smaller footprint, but still get around in a more effective way. And tire companies have always been at the leading edge of that technology curve. And that's even more true now that we're shifting into EVs. And I think it's absolutely fascinating. I would have given my eye teeth to be there to get an invite. That's quite the event. And good on Michelin for recognizing the opportunity to tell a story that, quite frankly, I don't think is being told, but it needs to be told.
Well, I had a chance to sit down with a few of the folks from Michelin. The first interview, I sat down with Caitlin Margetson. She is in charge of their North America business, kind of on the consumer side for replacement tires. Also, the Michelin Guide, the Michelin star restaurants. She's in charge of that as well. And Michelin Motorsports. So let's hear what she had to say. We're sitting down with Caitlin Margetson from Michelin. She runs North America when it comes to the consumer side, everything from replacement tires, for our cars and trucks, motorsports, and even the Michelin Guide as well. Caitlin, where should we start?
Let's start with motorsports, right? So motorsports, we actually talked about earlier today as part of this summit, that it's a critical mechanism for us to develop and accelerate the development of new sustainable solutions. So some might think that for motorsports, all we're doing is putting tires on the vehicles and we're done for the day after the race is over. But what's actually happening during these races is that we're collecting an immense amount of data and using that to inform our research and development on our passenger car tires, because there's really no better condition than the racetrack to test very quickly, because it's basically some of the harshest, most extreme conditions you're gonna find is the racetrack, right? Cars are being pushed to their end and to their extreme. And this gives us a lot of reads very quickly. And even working with the International Motorsports Association, IMSA, and some of our other partners like Le Mans, and even our previous relationship with Formula E, we've been able to collaborate with them. And even on street circuits, where cars are actually out on residential streets, this is creating conditions just like everyday driving. And so, again, it's another point in the research and the development that we can use and to inform our tires. So motorsports, it is its own business. We do sell tires to racing teams, so it does run independently.
So they actually buy tires?
They do buy tires.
You don't give them tires?
Nope, it's not free. No.
Okay.
No. They're not cheap to make those tires. So yeah, we definitely sell them. but we are extracting data insights throughout the racing season to inform our future development. So that's a key piece on how that fits into the passenger side.
So you're making money researching?
Yeah, some of that. Yeah, a fair amount. Yeah, I would say so. But there's still a cost to run that business, because if you can imagine, the racing teams are actually not carrying these tires around with them. We are shipping these tires to the destinations, and they are basically buying tires from us at the track, having them balanced to the degree in which they want to race.
You got a booth down there?
Yes, yes, literally. It's not even just a booth. This is like a big rig. It's a trailer full of tires, and they're basically bought and purchased right there at the track based on what the track conditions are, what the weather conditions are, and what the racing team desires. So,
do they pre-order them before the race?
Well, there's a certain degree of what we agree to with IMSA in particular in terms of what type of tires we need to have available for these cars. But yeah, I mean, we know generally how many tires they're going to need based on historical performances and things, but it's pretty exciting.
So they have kind of preset tires that they're going to have, but then maybe it's raining more and then just they come over to the trailer. Hey, I need some.
Yes, I need this, and I need it inflated this way and mounted in such a specification to make sure that it's meeting the accommodations of the track and how things shake out for the race, and even based on how the vehicle's driving and who's driving that day. So it's motorsports is pretty cool, okay? I'm lucky in terms of being able to do it, but that, like I mentioned, feeds right into the replacement tire business, because we're using that for R&D purposes. And that other portion of my team, we're designing products and also working with retailers to actively sell those products.
So when you say replacement tires, just the tires that people like me buy?
Yeah.
For my car or truck.
You got it. Yeah. Exactly. So you've already got a car. You need to replace the physical tire that are already on your vehicle. My team would own and be responsible for that. And so, again, the R&D for motorsports helps inform a lot of what we do in terms of future development and the technologies, as we call it, for the tires. And then how does the Michelin Guide fit into this? Well, very different situation. But the guide was invented over 100 years ago, really for the purpose of giving people inspiration of where to go with their car, right? So you need to know, where are good destinations for food. Now we've gotten into hotels, and, the Green Star has been brought up previously, which was just launched in 2020, tying in with the sustainability message. But the guide continues to be a way to reach consumers in an approach that was designed by the Michelin brothers 100 years ago. And so we haven't left that out. It's still a consumer touch point that we're able to have, and it's connecting all of the mobility that comes with tires and vehicles, but with where are people going when they are driving? Well, it's about going out to restaurants. It's about traveling. So
the Michelin guide, you have the 3 stars.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously having 3 stars is the highest. And you talked about this Green Star, which is a new thing.
Yes.
But that's not the same as like a 1 star. Like, you could have a Green Star and a 1, 2, or 3 star.
Correct. And so it's really our newest symbol to basically recognize those that are achieving sustainability in all of their production for how they're running their restaurants. And Palmette was a great example of what we had here today, where you literally have kind of that farm to table approach with them having an orchard and having a farm and now owning a restaurant. She's able to source incredibly local ingredients, and doing so within a lot of a very close distance from where she's operating out of course, with California being as vast as it is with fresh food, they're able to do that. So it's really just recognizing those who are pushing the boundary. And I believe the state of California actually has some of the highest numbers of Green Stars that are out there in terms of recognition for restaurants. And it's because it's kind of been a core piece to how this culinary scene has evolved here locally.
We're talking with Caitlin Margotson. She is with Michelin. She runs the 3 different businesses here in North America when it comes to replacement tires, the Michelin Guide, and motorsports as well. You got a lot going on.
All consumer facing.
Yes.
That's the thing that ties it together. But yeah, it's a very rewarding job. It is.
Thanks for joining us on the program.
Thank you.
So that was really interesting, Carmi. And again, as saying earlier, I got to race on the Sonoma racetrack. They actually had a Porsche, a Mercedes, and weirdly a Ford Explorer, outfitted with all the the different tires that they have, and we had to follow obviously a professional driver. He was in a Tesla Model Y, and even in the Porsche and this Mercedes AMG, I had a hell of a time keeping up to him. like that Model Y Tesla can go.
There's something to be said for having all of your torque available from zero RPM. And that is, that's the advantage of an electric vehicle, is you don't have to wait for an internal combustion engine to spool up, to rev up to the part of its torque curve where it's generating the most torque. And of course, that puts very unique, it puts a unique challenge on the tire itself, because it's a lot harder to be a tire on an electric vehicle than on an internal combustion vehicle, even one as powerful as a Mercedes AMG. And you know, I think we don't appreciate it until we see the high-speed video, until we actually get behind the wheel and drive it. But EVs are going to change the way we drive because of the nature of the technology. And that has implications for all of the subsystems that contribute to the driving experience, starting with the tire, which is the most important part, because that's what connects you to the world, to the road. But certainly everything else as well. They have to be beefed up. They have to be designed on a level that a conventional car simply cannot approach or cannot appreciate. And I think that's wonderful. I think it means that engineering, once again, takes front seat. And I think we end up with better products because of it, that ultimately allow us to get back to enjoying the act of driving, which I think for a while we kind of got away from. And maybe with these new vehicles, with these cool new tires, we'll get back to it.
I hope so. Well, I also got a chance to talk with one of their innovation leaders. His name was Cyril Rocher. And we actually got down to understanding what technology is important when you think of EVs. Let's have a listen.
We've got a great guest with us. His name is Cyril Rocher. He is with Michelin. Thanks for coming on the program.
Thank you very much.
So why do I have to care about tires when it comes to an electric vehicle?
Well, because tires are very important in terms of energy consumption. So normally when you consider tires for a normal internal combustion engine, one tank out of five are consumed by the tires. The fact that they have to deform and the friction that they create on the road, they consume energy.
So one out of five tanks of gas is just to the tire.
Yes, but it's the same for the electric vehicle. It's even more important, because on an electric vehicle, when you drive, you are part of the energy is going into the tire, so it's lost. But also on the regenerative braking, part of the energy that is supposed to come back into your batteries are also taken by the tires. So it's very important. If you choose the right tire, you can have like 40 kilometers more in terms of autonomy.
So my car gets about 350 kilometers charge per charging. So you say that if I have the right tires, I could get an additional 40 kilometers.
Yeah, of course it depends on the tire you have and the electric vehicle, but you could get, yes, 40 kilometers more with all the work we have done to be able to reduce the energy or improve the energy efficiency of the tire.
So what are you folks doing when it comes to tires? Like, do you have a certain line of tires that are specifically made for electric vehicles?
So we have some specific tires that are made for electric vehicles to improve the autonomy. But since we have worked for many, many years on improving the energy efficiency of tires, all our tire lines are today compatible. They are EV, what we call EV ready, depending on the usage. If you want a tire that is more polyvalent to all weather conditions, for example, you can have a tire that will meet this and also save autonomy for your electric vehicle. So all tires are, let's say, EV ready, what we say EV ready, on our portfolio. But we have some that are more dedicated to improve your autonomy with your electric vehicle.
So if I have an electric vehicle, are there summer tires and are there winter EV tires as well?
So there are no specific EV tires for winter, but you have winter tires that are already optimized with the Michelin technology to be very efficient in terms of energy assumption. So this is why we have EV-ready tires for all our tire lines.
It was interesting because I've been down at a sustainability conference with you folks here, and just learning how much actually goes into tires. And from, you know, one of the things I learned, there's 200 different types of materials that go into a single tire. 200. They made us guess, and I said five, right? Because I'm like, it's black, right? You know, I'm sure there's a few other things, but I couldn't imagine there being more. But 200 different ingredients, essentially.
Yeah, exactly. It's a really complicated cuisine, because we talk about also cuisine. It's a very technical, but it's also very elaborate in terms of process. So it's not only the ingredients that goes into the tire, but also how you process them to have the right tire. And when you think about all the performance that the tire has to deliver in terms of safety, in terms of fuel efficiency, in terms of resistance to abrasion. All those performances are very important, especially on electric vehicles. But it takes a lot of technology and high-tech material to be able to deliver all those performances at the same time.
So when you talk about performance and safety, you know, over the life of the tire, does the performance of the tire start going down as I wear the tire down?
Yeah, so not a lot of people know that. So if you keep your tires, well, the energy efficiency, that's a good news, will improve. Okay, so the more you keep your tires on your vehicle, the better they will get in terms of energy efficiency. But at the opposite, some performance, like adherence on wet roads or on snow, they will decrease with time. And Michelin has been long thinking about the performance and designing tires so that the performance, when the tires wear, they keep at a very high level of performance, not degrading too much.
So if my tires are at 50% tread, for example, is not going to be 50% less performance?
No. Hopefully, no. Now, the degradation in terms of performance is gradual, but we design tires so that the performance at the end of life, when you are reaching the tread wear indicator, it's still a very good level for a tire.
So what's next? You guys are known for your innovation. Like, what's the next kind of challenge or hurdle that you folks are trying to overcome when it comes to these new types of electric vehicle tires?
So the challenge is, you know, to reduce the environmental footprint of the tire. And this is where we look also at the material that goes into the tire. And today, 70% of the material that goes into the tire, they are coming from fossil-based material, you know, petrol, essentially. And what we are trying to do is replace those materials with materials that are renewable, so renewable on a human time scale, and also recycled material, so material that have been waste in the past that you can reuse. So some example, of course, are tires. We want to be able to collect tires at the end of life and put them through a pyrolysis process to be able to recover the carbon black that was in the tire initially and put it back in the tire to create new tires. And on the side, we will also recuperate some pyrolysis oil that can be used to replace, in fact, the petrol to create new materials, completely virgin new materials. But it could be also plastic bottles to do the reinforcement of our tires. We are working with a company that has discovered enzymes that are capable to digest the plastic from the plastic bottles. And those enzymes, they recreate the monomer of the plastic. So from that, you get a new plastic. It's not anymore kind of recycled because it's infinite in that case, the circle. Other example is styrene, polystyrene from, packaging and things like that, that you can reuse to recreate new styrene to create a synthetic elastomer. So a lot of technology that we are working to be able to replace those fossil fuel material and decrease the environmental footprint of the tire.
We've been talking with our friend Cyril Roger. He is with Michelin. He's one of their innovation officers. Mm-hmm. Not just innovation, but what else do you do?
Yeah, it's a scientific and innovation.
Okay.
Sorry. Yeah.
So you're an engineer.
I'm an engineer.
So you're smart.
Yeah.
You're the tire wizard. Well, thanks for coming on the program.
Thank you very much.
So not only did I get to race cars, as I was telling you down there on the raceway, but I also got to check out their partnership with Daimler. Daimler owns Freightliner, you know, the big semi-trucks? Well, they have a fully electric one. So this giant semi-truck, I got to drive it. And so, I got to be honest, I was a little nervous. I was a little nervous, right? Because I'm just thinking, you know, semi-truck, I'm going to get in here and, all the gear shifts and everything. And, you know, my mind, I guess, really made it up to be more complicated than it actually was. Carmi, it was like driving a go-kart. Like, seriously, it was all automatic, you know, giant screen, you know. It was the easiest thing. It was like just driving a regular SUV. It was that easy.
And I guess electrics changed the name of the game, right? Because they, like in a regular electric vehicle, like a car, they put the batteries really far down. So it moves the center of gravity very close to the ground. It means that they handle very differently than you would expect a semi to handle. They're not top heavy. They're a lot more stable. And certainly electric vehicles take a lot of the guesswork out of driving. The automation that they can build into them. Certainly we've been hearing Tesla talk about its Semi for a number of years and the automation that they're going to put into it. And I think it's fascinating because we often talk about the electric vehicle revolution as, you know, replacing the car that you and I drive. And to a large extent, that is happening. But I really do think that the revolution is probably going to hit us first in long range driving. And in, you know, so for example, semis, the transportation industry, they can seriously benefit from trucks with the range and the capability that even these first generation electric semis have. And I think that's really exciting. It's one of the reasons why Tesla has gotten so much attention with its semi, and likely why Daimler decided to put the money into this project as well. And I cannot wait to see that, because that's where we're really going to be seeing the savings by switching over from diesel to electric power. That will have a significant impact on our grid, and I'm thrilled to see leading edge companies recognize that and make the necessary investments to bring these products to market sooner.
Well, what's interesting, EV technology, I mean, it's really coming into its own with cars right now. With these big semis, it is a challenge. I think this particular one I drove had a range of just over 200 miles per charge, which you're not going to do any long haul trucking with that, because you're going to have to keep charging it. So you have to have that infrastructure in place. But that's why Michelin's also invested with a few partners, including Stellantis, in hydrogen cell technology, because they feel that is another alternative to zero emission as well, which is really part of their mandate to, you know, become, you know, a very sustainable company. You know, with hydrogen fueling, you know, as long as, again, you have the, you know, the infrastructure in place, you know, you can really go long distances with that type of technology. So it'll be interesting to see how that all pans out in the future. Lastly, I got a chance to sit down with their guy. His name is Luigi Cumo. He's more kind of on the business side. You know, commercial side. So dealing with, you know, the truck tires and even airplane tires as well. So let's have a listen.
We've got a great guest with us from Michelin. His name is Luigi Cumo, and you kind of handle like the B2B, the business to business.
Yes, that's correct.
And so when I think tires, you know, I think a lot of people think tires for my car and truck and motorsports for race cars, but you guys do tires for big trucks and mining and government. So what are all the different areas that you cover?
Yeah, I think when you start thinking about it, tires are present in a lot more places than you'd expect or that would initially come to mind. Big segments for us are trucking, which you'll see a lot later today and hopefully drive some of them. Urban, so think about your urban delivery vans, last mile service delivery too. We have agriculture. You'll also see a nice tractor out there with some great Michelin tires on it. Construction. We have some smaller parts on defense, tweel, material handling. So thinking about forklifts, other big areas for us, mining and aviation. So it's a pretty broad spectrum of businesses and segments. All of them use tires.
So when it comes to the tires for these other areas, like mining and these big trucks, like how much different are they than like passenger cars?
Other than the massive size of the tires? Yes, I think they're very different in terms of obviously the needs and the characteristics they have. From manufacturing, it's completely different. It's almost artisanal work in terms of building something that's 63-inch versus a passenger car tire. Even the numbers are completely different. I think from an application, that's probably where you'll see the most difference in terms of what the tires are designed to deliver on, endure, and provide for the customers. For a mine, a tire is going to be a lot more critical than a car. And if you stop a mine, you're stopping the whole operation. That's hundreds of thousands of dollars that's probably going to cost. So there's a lot of focus on uptime and ensuring that there's good equipment performance and safety on that side. So there's significant differences. You could probably have similar conversations around the other segments that we participate in.
And I guess when vehicles are being used from a commercial aspect, when I think of a passenger car, I mean, you're not using that, you know, 8 hours a day typically. You might be using it for an hour a day, but, you know, in a mining operation or a truck delivering, like an Amazon truck delivering stuff around town, they're going like sometimes 24/7.
Yes, and There are probably different needs. I could probably make a distinction if you're looking at your delivery trucks that are going around town, stopping frequently with a lot of curb scrub. You're going to have a big focus on the durability and longevity, both of the sidewall, but also of the tread. They go through a surprising amount of miles in a year, which means they could probably go through many cycles of tires, and having tires that will last longer can have a massive benefit, not only for their business, but also for the environment in terms of end of life. When we look at trucks, the tires play a fundamental role, specifically because we have line haul trucks over here. Fuel is line item three in terms of cost. It's going to be the people, fuel number two, tires number three. Tires impact fuel, so you're going to have a very big concern around what are the tires' contribution or impact to either reducing or avoiding any increases in the fuel consumption. Then the tire itself becomes a concern in terms of longevity and how many times can you retread it. So the large fleets are looking very closely at that equation to see if it's good for their business. When we talk about the driver, because you mentioned the driver, Michelin does have a lot of brand strength and credibility. So with that, I think comes a lot of perception of safety on the tire. So drivers will feel safe driving a Michelin, especially knowing, because as we have over here, a Michelin steer tire, knowing that you can depend on that tire for the performance of the vehicle is something that reassures the driver versus other alternatives that a fleet could have. So there is a human component or human concept to it, but for businesses, there's always a big focus on the business case and the total cost of ownership and how is that supporting or enabling the business to do more, better, or different.
It's interesting because I'm learning a lot about tires, as you can imagine, at this conference.
Hopefully.
Yeah, and looking, you've got a partnership with Daimler, and yeah. You know these big, is it Freightliner trucks that they have?
Yes.
And am I correct that on that truck, it's not all the same tire? It's like different tires depending on what yes. axle they're on. Why is that?
And I think to what I alluded is in these, is when you, specifically when you think of line haul, which is very long distances, point to point, they go through, I think it depends on the fleet and the application, but you'll see over 100,000 miles a year, 150,000 miles a year, more. So you're really going to be going through a lot of tires or the wear of the tires. When we design something for a vehicle like the Super Truck 2, which is a project in itself we can talk about, but we really optimize the tire for the position it's in. So the steer tires are going to be probably optimized for fuel efficiency, the longevity, safety. When you go to the drive tires, then traction becomes a bit more important, wear becomes a bit more important. And when you go to trailer, all you want is the trailer to go on a straight line. It's really about minimizing the rolling resistance in that space. And in that application, what's really true is usually you'll buy your steer tires, or we tread them as drive tires, or we tread them as trailer tires. So you also care about the casing. It's not only the tread, the first life, it's how many lives can you have after that? And the X-Line Energy Z Plus you'll see over here, as I mentioned in the morning, it's up to 4 retreads. So you can think about its first life on steer, second life on drive, its third life, fourth life on a trailer.
So retreading, I have to be honest, I've heard that before, that you can retread tires. Yeah. But what's involved with that?
So basically, you'd wear down the tire to its normal limit. You'd buff off the rest, inspect the casing for any damages, repair that if needed, and then you'd place a new tread over it. Process is more involved than I'm describing. You'd place a new tread over it and you basically create a new tire. There are a lot of obviously savings around that. Cost is much lower. As I mentioned in the morning, you save 15 gallons of oil on a retread versus having to build a new tire. And you're giving it many more lives. So your casing becomes an asset versus a passenger car with a one-time use.
Why don't they retread passenger cars, tires?
I think there are probably a lot to it and more than I'd be able to say. probably start with consumer perception as the first thing, because it's not something a consumer would usually consider or probably even feel safe on without knowing anything. On the commercial side, it's very well established practice. Everything from a fleet perspective, the operation perspective, the dealer perspective to support and retread that, it's all very well built and established. That doesn't exist on the B2C side.
What about aviation? What are some of the things that industry has to look for in tires? And do they do the retreading as well?
They also do the retreading. Less of an expert in that area, but as in they're also meant and designed to be retreaded. Obviously, safety is going to be your biggest driver, especially when you think about you're in a plane. When you land, the only thing between the plane and the tarmac is the tires. So you want to make sure that that's going to be a safe landing. The other thing that you think about with the recent launches that we have is the weight that tire has. So less weight on the tire allows either less fuel consumption, less emissions, or carrying more passengers or more luggage. So those would be some of the main things.
We've been talking all about tires when it comes from a business perspective. I want to thank you for joining us on the program.
My pleasure. Thank you very much.
I think that kind of wraps it up for the interviews there, Carmi. Again, a good trip overall, you know, a bit of a journey, but I did learn a lot about, you know, the tire technology, and, you know, they are coming out with this whole EV-ready tire line. Like, all the tires kind of going forward will be EV-ready. And also, it was interesting to learn about their sustainability goals. By 2050, they want to be 100% recycled and renewable materials in their tires. You know, they're already making them smaller and lighter, you know, still getting the same, you know, mileage on it. So I think it's, you know, they're really making steps in the right direction here.
That's wild. I think it's an important part of the conversation. You already see when some vehicles, when you have different wheel and tire options, what a difference it makes on range for an electric vehicle. And so it has such a huge impact on vehicle performance that we should be paying more attention to it. And I love that tire companies are, like Michelin, are taking the initiative to, you know, raise the volume on the conversation, because in the years to come, that increasingly it's not just an aesthetic thing. This is integral to the vehicle, and, you know, we're going to have to get familiar with that technology. May as well start now, get ahead of the curve.
That's all the time we have for this program. You got connected with Mike Eggerbo and Carmi Levy. Don't forget to hit our contest. We are giving away a Google Pixel 7 phone, smartphone, beautiful phone, and $250 that you can give to your favorite charity. This is all courtesy of the Friendly Future Foundation, the folks over at TELUS. This is Mike and Carmi logging off. We'll see you again next time.